Blog Talk Radio.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. It is Friday, July 3rd, and this is Retooling for Our Coming of Age. This is Jeff Dunphy.
And I'm Jamine Aponte.
Today we're going to chat a little about silence. We're going to chat a little about noisiness. And we're going to chat a little about how both of them are useful in our pursuit of understanding who we are and how we operate unfettered by the noise of the world.
Well, I guess it's no surprise, and I think it's obvious to most everyone living in this day and age, how noisy the world is in general. And I don't just mean in terms of sound, but I mean in terms of distractions, how many distractions we have on a regular and daily moment-to-moment basis. There really is very little time, I think, that the common person or the regular man spends in silence.
We juggle television, we juggle our smartphones, we juggle social media, we juggle radio, we juggle the noisiness sitting in a restaurant of all the yabber going on, we juggle our conversations and all the dramas of all the people that surround us. We've never had a time in the history of humanity that we know of where we have had more distractions.
Absolutely right. Even think about, here's a good example, is this idea of, and this has changed from when you were a child until now, when you were a kid, how many shows were there on television?
Well, when I was a kid, when we first got a TV, because I didn't get a TV, not because they weren't available, TVs were available long before we got one, we didn't get a TV because my parents thought a TV would be a distraction. So when we got a TV, I was color TV, I guess. I was 12 or 13. I think we didn't get a TV until I was 7 or 8. And there was 3 channels on TV.
Right. So there were 3 channels and the shows were once a week, right? So for a lot of the shows, you'd wait until the next Tuesday night or whatever night.
That's right.
Now we've got Netflix where you can, your show comes and you can watch the entire series in one sitting if you want to.
And that's either 10 or 12 or 13 or 15 shows all in one sitting. And some of these shows are an hour long. And so we become addicted to whatever the shows are. It's mental nicotine in a sense. And the show producers and the show creators are very good at hooking you in.
So I guess the next question is if it's obvious to everyone listening to this show and to us, that we live in a very noisy world, that where we are addicted to our personal devices and we're addicted to our television shows. The next question is how does that manifest through us? You know, how does that affect us in the larger scope?
From time to time, even though it may be inappropriate, we sit and we listen to other people talk, or sometimes we talk to people who we look at and think you shouldn't be talking, because oftentimes people open their mouth without giving a nanosecond of thought to what comes out of us, and refer to this as,
oh, that's a foot-in-mouth disease.
Yes, exactly right. And people open their mouth and start spewing stuff that not only have they given no thought to, they have become obsessed with expressing opinions that they themselves have given very little thought to.
They're basically regurgitating things that they've heard on television or even things that they've heard growing up, the beliefs and thoughts of their own parents, things like that.
And interestingly, if you get them in a quiet time and they aren't too defensive, you can ask them where that came up with. And oftentimes they'll just say that, oh, man, my dad taught me all about that when I was a kid. Yet,
or I grew up in a family of Republicans.
Exactly. Or I grew up in a family of left wings or right wings or middle wings or under wings. Who knows? But we do have a lot of time and a lot of energy spent speaking without giving the speech any thought. And I think this is a dangerous place to be. And I think it is contributory to the noisiness of the world.
So we start the picture out with this very noisy, busy world, and then as that trickles down through the people, we've got this indoctrinated society that has all of these subconscious patterns that come up and manifest through their thoughts and manifest through their actions. I know you see often on news stories these individuals who are experiencing road rage and who have snapped, or you see sometimes these instances of what is called a hate crime, where an individual goes and does some unspeakable violent act in a reaction to some projection or some belief that they have about this other person based on how they look. So this manifests in many various ways in society, and it's this whole idea of not being thoughtful, not being present in the present moment as they're interacting with other people, as they're going along in their everyday life.
There was an interesting study made years ago by the UCLA, and it talks about your reference to being reactive, but it talks about how, what percentage of time people are actually present and what percentage of time are people merely being reactive. Now, a reactivity would be the simple thing of when we talk to Bob, and anybody who says hello to Bob, Bob might say, "Hi, how are you?" And that is his reaction. He doesn't think about it. He just reacts to the question, "Hi, how are you?" And from time to time, Jameen and I in our Lamasery put that forward to the students. Why don't you try an exercise of saying something differently every time somebody asks you how you are? Because it brings you into the place where you have to be present in order to act. So it pulls us out of reactivity and it brings us into being present.
So I guess let's talk a little bit about what would you say, or what should we say is the difference between being present and having this distracted mind? So, you know, most people live in a place where they are present maybe when they're in the shower. Maybe when they're in the shower, they're present. Maybe for about 5 to 10 minutes before they're about to go to sleep, they're present. Maybe something scary happens in the middle of the day, like they almost have a car accident, and in that moment, they're very present. And so since people are not having large periods of time where they're actually present in their day, how do we describe that to people who don't experience it very often?
Good point. Very good point. When we watch ourselves daydream, when we watch ourselves worrying about the past or fussing about the future, when we aren't in the present moment, we're projecting or we're interpreting about the past, it takes us away from where we are. And the poets have done this justice in terms of writing about how they were this would be Walt Whitman, I believe. But
Thoreau.
Oh, Henry David Thoreau. Yeah, okay. They're in the forest, yet in fact they're far too preoccupied to even be there. How often do we find ourselves lost in a thought that takes us away from where we are, what we're doing? And it is always an exercise that is very worthwhile to practice what we call as immediacy, being right here, right now.
Or even a good example of it as well is how many times have any of you in the audience, how many times have you been in a conversation with someone, talking with someone, and the whole entire time, or most of the time while they're speaking, either you're thinking about a response, you're waiting for them to stop speaking so that you can say something in response, and you're not even listening to what they're saying, or maybe you just aren't listening. So maybe you're not even looking for a response to what they're saying. Maybe you're just plain not listening. And that's a really good example of how we're not present, even when we're in front of someone. And one of the things that we learned while we were on our silent retreat, which was a week ago, and we're going to talk about that a bit later, was this idea that when you give another person, another animal, or a plant, when you give someone else your full attention, that is the definition of generosity and respect.
Exactly. It's an act of respect and generosity. And on the antithesis of that is when you are interacting with another individual, another person, plant, animal, any being, and you don't give them your full attention, it is an act of disrespect. It is an act of ignorance. And it's something that we need to be ever reminded of. If you're going to be with somebody, if you're going to be interacting with somebody, be present.
So I want you to talk a little bit about this. What is the difference between real versus really experienced? I think this is a good example of how to bring this point home of the difference between presence and being distracted.
Yeah, well, let's chat a little about that. Is it real? Oftentimes people come up with that question. Yeah, but is it real? And oftentimes what they believe or they would like to hear is, was it really experienced? And let's lay it out in a couple of ways. The first way being, you've seen these shows on TV where the policeman will come to a crime scene and he'll chat with five different people and he'll say, what happened? Well, somebody walked into the store and pulled a gun and did this. But he'll ask all five people and all of them will say exactly the different things, right?
Well, let's change that example just a little bit to not a TV show, but real life. Because this happens in real life. So yeah. We're talking about real versus really experienced. So let's not use a fake TV show as the prime example. So in real life, there's a crime scene, and this happens all the time.
Yes.
A cop walks up to five different witnesses and
asks them what happened. And each witness will describe, some of them will describe in blinding detail what went on. However, when all of their accounts have been written down and compared, there will be huge gaps in clarity and huge gaps in what people saw versus what indeed really happened. And that's the difference between every one of the five witnesses actually really experienced an accident happening in front of their eyes, but what they really experienced may be far different from what really happened. So if in fact a camera was filming it, and one witness would say, oh yeah, that guy in the motorcycle was driving way too fast. And when they, in fact, she has a boyfriend who drives his motorcycle way too fast. So she is
projected.
She's predisposed to see every motorcycle as being driven too fast.
Right.
And when the real scene comes down, the scene comes down where the motorcycle is doing less than the speed limit, is driving quite carefully and cautiously. But what she saw was a projection of what she wanted to see or what she was predisposed to see.
Now, I think this is a really important point. And, you know, it's because of this truth that we really are our own little dimensions, okay, based on our perceptions. We live in our own dimension around our body. It's based on our perceptions. It's based on our own experiences, our own subconscious patterning, the projections that we create, and our thought patterns.
And that speaks to the phrase, can you see what is, or do you see what you want to see? And that's a big question, because I think, as Janine's just pointed out, if this woman who was talking about the motorcycle traveling too fast, her projection was motorcycles travel too fast because her boyfriend travels too fast on the motorcycle. And so she didn't see what was. She saw what she wanted to see because she needed to be right about motorcycles traveling too fast. And it's a very interesting, and that happens in many spaces and times.
But then you have to add on another layer onto that. And that next layer is that she doesn't realize that she sees it that way. She doesn't realize, most people don't realize that they're operating from a place of subconscious patterning. They don't realize that they're projecting. They don't even know what projecting is. They don't know that. And I think that's kind of the crux of what we're talking about here.
And that's part of one of the investigations that went on in our time in this silent retreat, and that was, we start to identify and start to recognize these unconscious patterns that affect us and that distract us and that hijack us. it's an incredibly valid observation that if you aren't aware of the thought patterns that may be running you or ruling you or directing you or changing the way you see things, then you are seeing things through a filter, or you're seeing things through
a fetter.
You are fettered by your capacity, which brings us to the old Taoist saying, can you see the world through eyes unclouded by longing? And that is indeed one of our aspirations, to be able to see the world through eyes unclouded by longing. And that also brings us to Buddha, who says our attachments to what we want to see or what we want or whatever it is bring about suffering. Can we see what is? Or do we only see what we want to see?
Now, let's talk about the pragmatics of this a little bit, because in theory, when you're thinking about it, when we're talking about it, when you're hearing it, it makes sense. It seems intuitively obvious. But how easy or how hard is it for someone to actually get to that place where they can see that they're projecting, or they can notice that what they're seeing is coming from subconscious patterns that were placed upon them by their parents or by traumatic experiences or whatever created their own personal viewpoint? How does someone get there?
Yeah, that's a great observation and a great question. One of the psychological declaratives on how best to tend to yourself in whatever way is recognizing that affliction, that affectation, that misalignment may exist. And one of the points that Janine brings up quite astutely is if you don't know that it's there, or if you don't want to know that it's there, you won't go searching for it. So yes, if you have a broken leg and it hurts like blazes, you actually have to go and tend to it. But if you have a broken thought pattern and it tends to serve you, you will not be embracing the thought of going and illuminating it and potentially changing it, because it's a limitation on how you see things and how you want to see the world. And so part of this little episode that we went in is to investigate how silence creates an avenue or an arena where you can identify and observe your thoughts.
Well, before we go into that, which we're going to go into shortly, we're going to talk about our own experiences and what it looked like. Let's talk a little bit about what are the benefits of being present, because let's say any of the listeners listening now, you know, you might think, well, you know, I like my Netflix shows, Jamine and Jeff. I like being on my phone all the time and talking with people on Facebook. I like analyzing and judging people. You know, I like having a busy mind all the time, because I can't imagine it any other way. What would we say is the benefit of finding presence, clearing out all of those thoughts, working on clearing out thought patterns, subconscious patterning, things like that? What's the benefit of that?
Well, let's back up into a time and a place where we collectively, the whole society or part of society or part of society who thought it was an elite society, had a thought, and the thought can be any thought, but that thought that society had for a period of time seemed to serve them. And then all of a sudden something happened where that thought became absolutely and completely proven wrong. The whole mindset, sociological mindset of blacks being inferior to whites, and how it took generations in order to recognize that we are all the same. And all of a sudden, the thought pattern now that blacks are inferior to whites is no longer, one, accepted, or two, seen as true.
And that can go for gay people. That can go for transgender people. A lot of that stuff is changing. But even a less controversial one, I think, is at one time, everyone thought the earth was flat.
Okay, and that was pretty controversial at the time, let me tell you. And then until Columbus sailed and actually proved that it wasn't flat. But people were put in prison who suggested that the Earth wasn't flat. Galileo had to go to prison because he started to be, because he was suggesting scientific truths that were evident to him, but flew in the face of society. So we often have this place of we are being potentially being manipulated by others in order to facilitate their objectives. So there was a movie about cigarettes and nicotine with Russell Crowe and Al Pacino, and I can't remember what the name of it was, but it just talked about the tobacco industry, how they put these addictive substances in the cigarettes in order to addict people. And now everybody knows that nicotine in cigarettes is addictive. But at the time and throughout the propagation of the tobacco industry's agenda, and that was to make lots of money to make people addicted to their product so they had to buy it, they were being manipulated. And we talked and made reference a little while ago about mental nicotine. Well, this is how the programs hook people in. And when you listen to this for a moment, how interesting it is where everybody needs to get their next fix of whatever the show is, whatever Netflix show it is, whatever HBO show it is, whatever the soap operas are. So when we bring people into awareness that maybe the agenda of television is in pursuit of the people who are advertising's agenda and not your own best interests. When do advertisers advertise on controversial documentaries or controversial things that turn lights on? They want to communicate to and advertise to people who are mindless and easily led.
Okay. So we're talking about the benefits of being present. And I would like to bring it to an example of athletics. Okay, so in athletics, they talk a lot about being in the zone. And, it's kind of a catchphrase now. It's kind of like sometimes I think if you have no idea what this actually means, if you have no idea what immediacy is, if you have no idea what this idea of being in the now is or presence, then being in the zone, it has really become like a cultural, like Nike ad almost. But what it actually means is this idea where you are so focused on what you're doing, you're so focused on playing that there are no distractions happening in your mind, and it allows you to play at a much higher level than if you were thinking about what the other guy's doing, or it's this idea that you have practiced and practiced and practiced, and that you can just play on autopilot in a sense. And so what it does is it heightens your level of play, and it's this idea of being present in sports. What other examples do you have of what being present is, or what the benefits of being present
I want to continue along the athletic thing for just a moment, but I want to chat a little about great golf events where the golfers are just playing out of their mind, and all the commentators are all just saying, he's in the zone. You can see he's focused, but he's relaxed. You can see he's attentive, but he's relaxed. You can see he's not stressed out. Now, in golf on the final Sunday, there's lots of stress, there's lots of pressure, but those who perform the best are not distracted by the pressure. We see the tennis players, the Serena Williams of the days, or the Roger Federer of the day, they get to be in that space where they're relaxed and at the same time poised and brilliantly executing their strokes.
Well, I know that you and I both have played sports in the past, and I'll speak for myself that I was always a very anxious athlete. I always felt very anxious before a sporting event, and I often, thinking back retrospectively, wish that there had been someone that had taught me mindfulness at that time, because I think I would have been a much better athlete because I wouldn't have been focused on almost a fear of not doing well enough, or a fear of even letting down the team in a sense. And it's these thoughts, I think, that creep in, that take someone out of the zone. And what the point of this is, when you compare it to your regular life, whatever it is that you're doing, if you're a parent and you're with your kids, if you are a teacher and you're in front of the classroom, if you're driving your car, if you are writing a paper, whatever it is you're doing, that thing would be much better served, would have a much better result. You'll be a much better parent. You'll be a much better driver. You'll write a better paper if, when you're doing it, you're present. You're in the moment. You're in the zone.
We talk about diffuse light. And in Canada, on occasion, you can get a crystal cloud in the middle of the winter when it's really cold, where the crystals just float around in the air, and it feels like you're in this bright light that has no focus. And the antithesis of that would be a laser beam. Laser beam focused light can burn holes through all kinds of things. And that's where attentiveness and paying attention serves you really well. How often when we're in the park with our children and you're on your phone while your children's falling off the slide or falling off the merry-go-round, whereas if you were being with your child and attentive to your child, you may have been there in a place where you could see what was going on.
Well, and it doesn't even have to be a negative thing like that. It has to just be that idea of being generous and being respectful and giving the people that you're spending time with your attention, and yeah, how you know, you're not in your life. You're not there when you're somewhere else. You know, why not just be there? And it's this whole idea that there really is no other moment than now. The past already happened. The future hasn't happened yet. What's the point of taking yourself there in your mind when living only happens right now?
Incredibly astute. And also hardly ever practiced, but super important.
Now, what I want to say before we move on is, I know you have a really good nature example of what it means to be present. I would like you to say that too. But I would like to say this too, that one of the main benefits of being present, practicing mindfulness, trying to get yourself to a place where you can be present, is from a spiritual standpoint, what happens is when you're present, when your mind is free, when you're not thinking about other things, when you're right here, right now, what happens in those moments? A channel opens up. Okay, you're opening up a channel that connects you to your higher self, your soul, your genius. I mean, think about it. How many times have people said, you know, I was in the shower and I got this amazing idea. And the reason why is because at that moment, they were present.
Exactly. And something presented itself with a clarity that you don't often get from other people doing your thinking or from other people finding the silence. Jamine was making reference to Mother Nature in you. If you sit and look at a big old bullfrog sitting on a rock, it looks like it's laconic. It looks like it's perfectly relaxed. You can pick it up and it dangles its feet. You pick it up and it appears as if it's just in a zone, and you lay it on the rock and you leave it alone. But the second a dragonfly flies by, the bullfrog is perfectly still, perfectly seemingly content and seemingly right out of it, but not when the dragonfly flies by. It's right there to catch the dragonfly.
With shocking speed.
And when those of us who've studied martial arts, when in terms of them showing you how to be prepared, the preparedness aspect of many martial arts is to be perfectly relaxed and not poised. Because when you're perfectly relaxed, you don't have to unclench or untense yourself in order to put yourself into a new position. Mother Nature gives us examples of being attentive all the time. The bullfrogs, the various hunters, the various animals.
A lot of Mother Nature doesn't have the same type of mind that we have. So, mm-hmm. I mean, they don't come up against the same challenges.
They aren't on their phones, you mean? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. They're not watching hours and hours of House of Cards. So let's talk a little bit about the retreat that we went on. So last week, we were on a silent retreat in New Mexico. And we basically had to turn off all technology. There was no TV, no phones, no internet, and no talking. And, you know, that takes out the whole idea of the noisy world.
Can you imagine, ladies and gentlemen, no TV, no phones, no internet,
no texting,
no radios, no talking. That's something that almost nobody in the first world has experienced for a good long time.
Plus, in addition to that, we were meditating 8 times a day. And so in those meditations, we were paying attention to our bodies, we were paying attention to our emotions, and we were paying attention to our thoughts. How was that for you?
Well, part of what the Egyptians talk about, part of what we talked about is watching how it was for us. So we had, and we experienced, I know that you did too, when you get really quiet and you sit in meditation, we had sitting meditations and we had walking meditations, but in the sitting meditations, here's what might have happened. Oh, my foot's getting a cramp. Or?
Oh, it was always, my nose was always really itchy.
And sometimes people would be sneezing. Sometimes people would want to move and shift and change their sitting positions.
Well, the interesting teaching that was given to us in that time was, so we're talking about the body first. The first thing that we paid attention to was the body. And the teaching that was given to us was, watch how your mind attaches to the sensations in your body and see if you can remain still. And by placing attention there, watch whatever it is dissolve. And so what we were really playing with throughout the week was the idea, and it's a Buddhist teaching, and the Buddhist teaching is this idea of aversion and attachment, and how our mind generally places the things that we encounter into those two categories. And what's the third category? It's neutral.
Greed, hatred, and aversion.
Greed, hatred, and aversion. And greed would be an attachment. Hatred would be aversion. And then aversion is aversion. But it's basically greed, hatred, and then there's a neutral category. And but
delusion.
Delusion, thank you. It's actually attachments, aversions, and delusions are the three categories. And then they break down into other various categories. Like, for example, greed would be under attachments and hatred would be under aversions. And then fear and self-doubt and those types of thoughts or emotions would fall under delusion. In any case, your mind categorizes things into these main categories. And go ahead.
So back to what would happen when your mind is categorizing things and you have a sore foot. People initially would try to move to correct the sore foot, but it wouldn't make any difference. And what I discovered and what many other people discovered is that when you focused on the sore foot and you just let it be, you didn't have to do anything more than just focus on the sore foot or the uncomfortable foot, its distraction became less and less and less. It just melted away. Or with your itches, what happened with your itches when you were going through?
It depends on what type of person you are. If you're someone that is very intact with your senses, if you're a very sensory person, you feel things a lot, then, you know, you really notice how your mind can use those things to distract you. And let's just talk really briefly about why your mind would do that in the first place, right? Why would your mind not want you to be thoughtless and present? Why would your mind try to attach onto a feeling or attach onto the way someone offended you earlier, or attach on your aversion or dislike for another person? Why would your mind do that?
Well, your mind, or your ego mind, as we'll sometimes make reference to it, gets quite concerned if it's ever put in a place where its sense of control or its sense of identity is threatened. And when, as we've learned throughout time immemorial, when you get quiet enough, you start to see that your ego mind is merely a very small part of you. And your ego mind doesn't want you to discover that. Because as soon as your ego mind discovers that it isn't in control, and it isn't who you really are, it loses what it thinks is its identity. So it wants to make sure that it's constantly tapping you on the shoulder and constantly reminding you that it's in control.
So your ego mind would be your everyday personality, your subconscious patterning, the, you know, your aversions, your delusions, your attachments to things. And the more you work on watching those patterns and dissolving those patterns and changing those patterns, quieting your mind, creating that channel so that you can connect with your higher self, your soul, your genius, whatever you want to call it, the more you work on connecting with that and the quieter your mind becomes, the smaller and smaller and smaller the influence your ego mind has over you. And so basically it doesn't want that to happen. It wants to continue having control over you do.
And I want to go to the other side of that for a second, because when you exercise your willpower on that and you lessen its impact, you then start to get insight into our body talk, our sore ankles, or our legs are going to sleep, or our itchy noses, or whatever. When you focus on it, all you have to do is focus on it. You don't have to resist it. You just focus on it. And by focusing on it, it changes.
Shifts.
And so when we have an emotion, when we start to play, I'm hungry, or I'm thirsty, or I'm hot, or I'm cold, all you're called to do is pay attention to that emotion. Paying attention to the, I'm upset, I'm anxious, I'm desirous of experiencing something. I'm looking forward, not being present. I'm looking forward to experiencing something. When you can observe,
and
those
it's not only just observing it. It's observing it, but it's also categorizing it as to what it is, right? So, your favorite Gladys, let's say earlier in the day, Gladys stepped on your foot and then she gave you the stink eye. And so, you know, you're replaying this in your mind over and over and over again. And you sit down to meditate, okay? You sit down to meditate and the thought of Gladys stepping on your foot, and she didn't even say she was sorry. She's so rude. I have an aversion to Gladys and I have an aversion to rude people. You see that thought, it comes up, and not only do you see it, but then you notice that that's aversion. I have an aversion.
And you're watching, going, aha, you're watching it.
I have aversion. Mm-hmm. And then that dissipates it. And you know, one of the best teachings I really enjoyed from the week as well was this idea of when you place your attention on the feeling, but not the content. So use the same exact example. You have anger, you feel anger, and then you just place your attention on the anger, but not on what happened. And then you watch as that anger shifts, moves away from you, moves through you, and then it becomes a non-issue. And there was like these small, easy techniques that we were taught. Easy, that's kind of a funny thing. Ha ha, ha ha, it wasn't easy at all. It's not easy.
We talk about in the Lamasery a lot about how meditation is the easiest thing and the most difficult thing you'll do. And then we step it up a bit, and then it's mindful meditation. And man, the interesting part, we were doing meditations 8 times a day. And that, ladies and gentlemen, was really hard work. It seems pretty easy. You sit quietly, or we were doing walking meditations where you walk very quietly and very deliberately, but you wouldn't believe how challenging it was, how difficult it was, and how tiring it was. At the end of the day, doing all this work, you were
excited for sleep.
Absolutely, diligently pursuant of going to sleep, because it was a very arduous task.
So can we just talk for a second? I know there was just so much covered in the week. There was so much that we learned. There was so much to share that we were a little bit all over the place. But I want to talk a little bit about meditation, and I want to talk about how we were instructed to meditate. What was the basic instruction? And that basic instruction was focusing on your breath. And this is this teaching that we learned was a Buddhist teaching.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think one of the practices that many yoga teachers teach, which Jimin is a yoga teacher, and also one of the things that's happened from time immemorial, is the import of the breath. And I don't think we can emphasize how important the breath is. And if ever you wish to gain presence right away and immediately, all you have to do is think about your in-breath and think about your out-breath. It's that easy and simultaneously that difficult.
And simultaneously that extremely difficult.
So when we literally think about breathing in and think about breathing out, I remember even my parents when I was a little kid, when something was very upsetting, I remember my mother just looking at me in the eyes and saying, breathe, breathe. And I remember thinking, now in retrospect, I look back on that and think how practical that is, how prudent that is, how sensible that is. Yet when I was 12 and feeling upset with my mother and she said, breathe, the rational part of me went, I don't need to breathe. I'm breathing already. If I wasn't breathing, I'd be dead. And how the discriminating mind, how the ego mind
what
would get in the way. And so part of breathing, there's nothing more effective to get yourself present than literally to stop for a moment and think in as you're breathing in and think out as you're breathing out. It's a very effective technique to get you into your presence.
And I think that was a really good tip too, is, you know, how do I practice mindfulness constantly throughout your day, all day long? Ask yourself, where's my breath?
Where's my breath?
Where's my breath?
Yeah.
You know, you can still do work. You can still be on the computer. Pay attention to your breath while you're doing it, you know, and be present. And when your mind isn't off thinking about the list and what you have to do later and what you have to plan later and going to the grocery store and that Gladys who stepped on your foot, when your mind's not in all those other places, if you can just bring your attention right onto your breath right now, you'd be really surprised at how
focused you are.
Yeah, how much in the present you are. And it's such an important practice.
Mm-hmm. And it was one of the more delightful times we've spent.
So we are coming to the end of our show today, and we have so much more to talk about in terms of mindfulness and meditation and immediacy and presence. And we hope that we will be putting on another show next week on Friday.
Mm-hmm. Next Friday we will be doing another show, and we want to thank you for your attention. We also want to remind you that finding the silence, being silent, here's an interesting little vignette. Have a bath, stick your ears under the water and get really quiet. It's a very interesting
listen to your breath.
Listening to your breath.
Or take a whole day, or, you know, dedicate a week to no television. No television, no radio, just the bare minimum technology, or spend an entire day in silence.
And fasting for the soul.
Yeah, try it out. Give it a try. See how challenging it is for you, or how wonderful. You might love it. Give it a try. No matter what, though, please go visit our website. It's retooling.org. You can like us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter. And we will very soon be also having an Instagram account. We will hopefully see you on social media. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you for your attention, ladies and gentlemen. This is Jeff Dunphy.
And Jamina Ponte.
Retooling.org. We will see you again next week.